right, welcome to Highly Questionable. I got Izzy Gutierrez, who's in Miami, but wearing a sweater of sorts. We have Sarah Spain, who is not playing soccer, but dressed for the part. Let's roll.
AFC Richmond, baby.
Would a 12-team college football playoff make the sport more interesting or just more random?
All right, so The Athletic has this report that the good folks that run college football, which is like a zillion different people, but apparently some of them are a little worried about fan interest falling off, and they're worried about the same teams winning all the time. So maybe you expand the playoff, and they think that that's the way to return interest and intrigue into college football, to which I say, yeah, be careful what you wish for. The truth is, there ain't that many teams that we want to watch play extra games. There's that part of it. Number two, as much as we talk about the same teams keep winning all of the time, I don't know how much different you think that's going to be if you were to institute this larger playoff. Because the only way that you're not going to have those same teams winning, and they're winning because they're better than everybody else, you're going to have that because they're going to have dudes wind up getting hurt. And that's going to introduce some randomness that, hey, maybe we'll make this thing more entertaining. But go back to what I just said. You're talking about a whole lot more dudes getting hurt. And let us not forget that they always tell us that they don't pay the athletes in college football because they just don't have the money. And then they keep coming up with new ways to get even more money, but they still don't have enough money to pay the players. But they never do this because they need the money, just because they want the money. I am opposed to any playoff expansion that does not start with actually giving some of that money to those dudes. Otherwise, who are we helping here?
Yeah, I mean, Bo, that's a whole other can of worms, right? I totally agree with you. Like, why were we so concerned about helping all the people already making all of this money? Let's address name, image, and likeness. Let's address other ways to pay the players. But if we're speaking specifically just about expansion and whether it's a benefit, I think it is. I absolutely think we need to add more intrigue than the same teams. I think it's 20 out of 28 spots have gone to the same couple schools since they introduced this new model. I'm here for it. I don't want 12 of them to. I think what you said is right. There are not 12 teams that I need to see more of. We've already seen some really lopsided games in the playoffs because the best are so much better than the others. But if we introduce, say, 8 teams, I'm here for it. Even 6 teams, I'm here for it. Like, I want some more teams to have the opportunity so it doesn't seem like it's based just on let's go to the Power 5, pick the couple that we like, and it's the same ones year after year. But no automatic bids. This needs to feel like the best teams in any given year are the ones that are competing. And if it ends up being a lot of the same schools, at least it's a wider variety of those schools. To me, automatic bids takes away from the legitimacy of what's being competed, because then there's teams in there that are getting the break speed off them because they happen to be the best in a conference that gets a spot.
So this is actually an argument changer for me. It's changed my mind entirely. I used to be, and I sort of normally think of the mind of like the athlete or the competitor and say what's best for them. And in terms of the sport of football, it's, you know, who's the best team? I think we've been finding that out since the BCS. You didn't need to expand to 4 teams. You didn't need to really expand. You don't need to expand to 12 teams to find out from year to year who the best team really is. But when you're talking about the health of the sport, when you're talking about the danger of college football, whether you think it's real or not, to be more regionalized like baseball, I think this is absolutely enough of an argument to say, okay, let's include these other teams. And I think 12 is a good number because you're talking about probably 4 with a bye, and then you've got 8 teams that, you know, play, and then you're down to 8 after that, and you go from there. And I think it seems like something that can obviously replace the bowl system, which I'm not entirely in favor of just saying, hey, the bowls are boring, let's get rid of them, because there's economies involved there, there's jobs involved there. But it seemed like the bowl system was kind of crumbling on its own with players opting out, as Bo said, because they didn't want to get hurt. This would seem like something that would encourage them to play again because they're actually playing for something. And even if the same teams end up winning the championship, 3 or 4 teams, the 12 teams that are involved are going to feel like there's something special there. And if that grows the fan bases or keeps the fan bases, I'm all for it, because it's almost like, you know, inclusion and representation matters in all walks of life.
Have you seen what's been happening to the 4 seed in this playoff?
Yeah.
Have you? The 4 seed hasn't been able to get anything done.
But think
done
about
in this
the
playoff.
Cycle that happens, though, Bo. You've got 8 other teams that suddenly get a lot more attention, are suddenly getting in the spotlight, probably get better recruits. Probably there is more parity as a result. And then you're talking about, hey, maybe 1 through 6 teams can win a championship any year. Maybe eventually 1 through 8. And the reason they're going with 12 is just to avoid the constant growth. Just say, hey, let's set a number that we think for the really long term is going to be good enough for people. So if we expand, you know, the teams that matter and that to 12 and then get those teams to have better teams year to year, we won't have the same teams winning theoretically year to year.
Let me ask you this. Has this playoff made things better? Has this playoff made college football more entertaining? Because I would argue that it hasn't. The solution to that should probably be get away from the playoff model and go back to something a little closer to what you did before, which you enjoyed more. Oh, no. We're going to take the thing that already didn't make things better, and we're going to double down and do even more of that so that we can put some schools in there that have no business playing and have them get the brakes beat off of them in front of America, because that'll make more people want to go there. Nah, man. Nah, bye.
I much prefer the playoffs to the BCS. I think an expanded system would make teams rise and get better and get better recruits.
What got better?
More relevant.
What got better about doing this versus what the system
was? It was only
before?
Doubled. You're only going from 2 to 4. It really wasn't enough to make people feel included. And so, those 3 and 4 teams are probably in the same area, in the same regions.
This is the time that college football wants to care about including people in all the different ways that they don't include people. This is the one that we care about.
Would it make sense for teams to ding players in the draft who opted out last year?
I was wondering when this was going to come up. We are one day ahead of the NFL draft, and now we started to get the questions about how teams will evaluate players who opted out from last season because of COVID-19, or, you know, maybe they just didn't feel like playing. Either way, the general manager of the Steelers, Kevin Colbert, he said that if it comes down to the line between two guys and they're about evenly matched, he probably would gravitate toward the player who did not opt out. We also heard the Cowboys, where Mike McCarthy apparently has said that look, they're losing like 700 reps of game action, and that affects the way that a guy performs, affects their development. There's something to it, except I feel like you just look at the tape that they already put up. If you like what you saw in the tape that they already put up, then go ahead and roll with that. If you're giving them demerits just for the fact that they opted out, you, sir, are an idiot. But if you feel like what you saw did not make you feel comfortable enough about taking a guy, that makes total sense. It's about the same as if a guy got injured. You got less data in order to work with. But a punitive punishment just because somebody looked around and was like, I'm afraid I might die if I do this? Come on, man.
Yeah, the less data argument I'm not a fan of. I don't think that having another year of the same or slightly better tape is going to convince you to draft this guy. The one argument that I can't argue against is just the value of actual snaps, of actual games, and not just sitting out and working out on your own to save your own legs or for whatever reason. It's obviously to save your own health. But this kind of sounds like to me something that college coaches would clearly push. And if I'm a college coach with an ear, you know, with one of the college coaches' ear or a GM's ear, I'd say, hey, can you just get that out there? Because I don't want my guys, obviously, to opt out. I want them to play, because you can make the opposite argument. That's them saving their legs, especially at a position like running back that seems to, you know, go away after 3 or 4 years, at least your skills do. Maybe they'll be better off sitting out that final year and just resting their legs and having a longer career. So this to me just sounds like a college coach pushed narrative right around draft time.
The morality angle on it is super easy. Like Bo said, to just punish somebody for making a wise decision about their health and the health of those around them, particularly when the college football season started off real rickety. Like, we weren't really sure what protocols were in place, whether they'd be actually enforced, how players would be treated if they did get sick. So all of that is an easy answer. When you do take into account the amount of work that can be done over that last season and improvement and steps forward and readiness for the pros, it's worth taking into account. So is work ethic, right? What has that player been doing while they've opted out? Are they still in shape? Have they been putting in the work outside of the program that they're in? All of that matters. So if they're the same and they're even, then your decision probably shouldn't be made on that, because you just said they're the same, right? And if you have to go back to the tape from 2 years ago and at that point you didn't think they were ready, then yeah, maybe they're not ready now either. But that's the same as an injury or any other thing that would cause you to miss a season of a guy. Just punishing someone for making that choice as if they're not into football enough or they don't love the game, that to me would be an absolutely unwise decision by these folks if they want to get the best talent.
Let me tell you something, too. In the end, I bet this is going to be just like the Wonderlic. How many picks have ever really been determined by what somebody scored on the Wonderlic? Probably zero. On this one, there's going to be all this talk about it. But when it comes down to it, do you like this guy or not? And they're just going to go on that.
Up next on HQ.
It's both. Boxing is prioritizing these spectacles because the audience wants them. Because boxing as a sport is dying, and in order to get those last dregs of people who are willing to show up, they are going to the biggest names and those that draw an audience instead of the most talented.
Are Jake and Logan Paul saving or destroying boxing?
Yo, I just heard about this, and I heard people talking about it, this idea that Logan Paul is Logan, right? That's the one we're talking about. They're a couple of YouTube brothers, but not brothers like me. They are related to each other. Anyway, Logan Paul is going to fight Floyd Mayweather, and Showtime is going to do it. Like, this is actually a thing that is going to happen because Floyd Mayweather, with that Conor McGregor fight, figured out something that he'd already figured out before, as he loves to use race baiting in order to sell fights. And he's like, if I go out here and I fight some really popular white dude that's not actually a boxer, and then I make the fight look like it's a little bit close so the white people can convince themselves that their hero in the fight actually had a chance, they love that stuff. That's exactly what happened with the McGregor fight. And people will really tune in and convince themselves that if Floyd Mayweather gave a damn that this amateur boxer who is doing a pretty good job beating up people who aren't actually boxers, they will convince themselves that they have a chance to do the thing that they've been waiting decades for somebody to do. Beat up Floyd Mayweather. This is not an indictment on boxing. This is an indictment on the people who will watch this, because we have now gotten to a point where there's a generation that really values spectacle over elite athletic competition. They would rather watch regular people box than watch great people box because of the story that then surrounds it. And Floyd Mayweather is going to parlay that all the way to the bank. The problem ain't boxing. The problem is the people.
I entirely disagree. I think the problem is boxing, because boxing has the elite athletes that will make for the elite fights, and they're not creating them. What boxing needs is an audience. What Jake and Logan Paul have is an audience. So this isn't about boxing skills. This isn't about the idea that Mayweather might actually struggle against these guys. No, it's about that Mayweather even took the fight, and there are millions of people who care about these Paul brothers and what they actually do, and they're going to tune in to watch, which is why they won't surround the fight with other less impressive fights. They'll surround the fight with other things that'll just entertain you in the interim. And so, you know, Chris Mannix wrote a great story about this, and it's, or a column about this, and it's basically that. It's boxing has failed the sport, because whether it's the promoters, whoever is doing this, they have the opportunity to create interest in it, and they just aren't doing so. Whether it's the fighters themselves don't have enough personality, and I have a hard time believing that, because when have boxers in any sort of extended era not had personalities they wanted to throw out there? So I do think it's boxing's inability to create an audience for itself, despite having the real fighting talent in its corner. No pun intended.
You guys are both right. It's both. Boxing is prioritizing these spectacles because the audience wants them. Because boxing as a sport is dying, and in order to get those last dregs of people who are willing to show up, they are going to the biggest names and those that draw an audience instead of the most talented. Because people are just not as interested in super talented boxers fighting each other. They're interested in this garbage. They're interested in a YouTube sensation whose main currency is controversy, and who lost his only professional fight, which, by the way, was to another YouTuber, not a professional boxer, going up against a 44-year-old retired admitted abuser who's a five-time champ and should think it below him to get into a fight like this, but nothing is below him. And then all the people that are willing to knowingly spend their money on an unrepentant and admitted abuser toying around with a child who's made a living off of attention seeking and call it boxing. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for all the people who are going to buy it. I'm embarrassed for the sport, but this is all they have left.
Sarah makes a lot of good points, but I ask you guys this. When you say that boxing is dead and boxing doesn't have an audience, how did Floyd Mayweather get rich? All these people that were not watching are the reason that he got this money. With a big fight to this day remains. Boxing match is still bigger than anything else that goes on. Since I've been here, I've gone to a lot of boxing matches. They get those people into the Garden Forum. When I've done radio shows and you start talking about boxing, there are people that call in and do it. This is a call in to really love to talk about it. This is kind of like baseball. If you watch baseball, you think everybody watches baseball because all your friends watch baseball. And if you don't watch baseball, you think that nobody watches baseball because your friends don't watch baseball. There are still a lot of people. I'm telling you, there are a lot of people that watch.
I'm not saying that there's nobody. What I'm saying is, name me the biggest fights. It's like Mayweather, McGregor.
Didn't we just have the Wilder Tyson Fury fight not too long ago? If the Joshua Fury fight comes around, people are going to be all over that one.
So you get one fight every couple years? Well, that's what I'm talking about.
You are not into them. The idea that boxing is dying because necessarily us as individuals aren't into what the fights are doesn't mean that it's dying. It's just moved into a bit of a different place. It's not at the top of the marquee like it used to be, but baseball's not at the top of the marquee like it used to be either. It ain't dying. It's just different.
Up next on HQ.
I would go ahead and maybe blame the pandemic because some of these ushers are a little rusty and like used to watching the baseball, because if you do this regularly, you recognize when the ball is coming to you. And that is a large overreaction to jump over the rails like that. And then the other one, to actually go into the field of play. Have you never done this before? I'm going to go ahead and blame COVID on this one and give him a pass.
Do you question which usher did a better job of avoiding this fair ball?
All right, we are going out to Reds Dodgers, and these ushers found their way into foul territory, like on the field of play. And his ball starts off fair and tails foul. Oh, wow.
That's just the first guy.
Oh, that was like a cartwheel right into the stands.
Wow. What's,
right. And then what's the ground rule?
Yeah. The plane. Oh, get out of the plane.
What's the ground rule for intrusive umpires ushers in the outfield? Because I don't think there is one.
Hold on, run this back again, because I'm going to be honest with you. I'm glad that you told me that these guys were ushers, because from the video I'm watching, I'd have thought they was burglars. I really cannot believe that nobody came out and like tried to handcuff them or anything else. Because they look like they're stealing.
I mean,
why are they on the field?
I would go ahead and maybe blame the pandemic because some of these ushers are a little rusty and like used to watching the baseball, because if you do this regularly, you recognize when the ball is coming to you. And that is a large overreaction to jump over the rails like that. And then the other one, to actually go into the field of play. Have you never done this before? I'm going to go ahead and blame COVID on this one and give them a pass. But when you think about it, it's just kind of terrible ushering.
How rusty you got to be to not remember that the ushers are in the stands and not in the game?
Tonight on ESPN, Lakers and Wizards.
All right, so Dr. J, Julius Erving, did an interview with Chris Haynes of Yahoo. He gave his first team and second team all NBA history. He did not put LeBron James on it. That's going to be a thing.
The guy who has led the charge in terms of super teams being put together. Yeah. You know, when he put together a team in Miami, he put together a team together in Cleveland as well, and put together a team in Los Angeles or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he could pick his own team. I ain't gonna pick his team. Not bad about LeBron.
Yeah, I'm talking, LeBron would argue, because I know he would probably come back to me, but he will argue that these super teams always existed. If you look at all the championship teams, they've always had 2, 3, or even sometimes 4 all-stars.
Players weren't picking their own teams.
Hateration. Holleration. All up in the dancery. Now, to me, everybody got all charged up about the fact that he didn't have LeBron on the team. I have a much bigger problem with the fact that he did have Karl Malone on the team. That was on his second team, but still, let's deal with that part before we get to anything else. Izzy, you intrigued?
No, well, I am actually intrigued by the game because Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal are playing and the Lakers have something to play for. I am not intrigued by Bo. I told you earlier in this week, the rule is do not go on a podcast and answer a top 5 or a top 10 question. Don't do it. You're going to get yourself in trouble. And I guess I'm just surprised because of the trend of, you know, older NBA vets just being all ornery and just not liking the current day. It's like the older I get, the more just nice I feel like I am. These guys are going the opposite way. It's weird.
I'm intrigued for a number of reasons. One, a third of his thesis was that Cleveland was a super team, which Also, I agree with you, Izzy, and I think the reason that they get this way is because young people are disrespectful and don't remember the greatness of the generation. So they're like, well, if anyone's going to dig their heels in and make sure everyone knew how good we are, I guess it's going to be us, even if we have to make ridiculous declarative statements like LeBron James' involvement in super teams eliminates him from being one of the greatest players of all time. I mean, I think it's nice that we can all have different opinions on this. I think there should be probably some things that are just all agreed upon. And one of those is that LeBron is one of the greatest players of all time, better than Karl Malone. But, you know, guys, I always kind of suspected he wasn't a real doctor. So.
All right, that's the show. Izzy Gutierrez holding it down all week here on HQ. Sarah Spain, check her out on the radio on Spain and Fitz, 7 to 9 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
And listen to The Right Time with Bomani Jones.
There we go. Izzy, you see how other people
off
do
tomorrow,
this?
So
okay,
whatever.
Well, I shouldn't even say anything about you.